Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Did you know that Organifi makes products for kids? They just launched their brand new kids product called Organifi Protect. This is a delicious wildberry punch that tastes just like Kool-Aid you used to have as a kid, but without the sugar. This delicious berry punch is crafted with the purest organic ingredients, including a potent combination to bolster your child's immune defenses. It's especially formulated for kids with no artificial ingredients and gentle enough for them to drink every day. If you already love Organifi, you can add Organifi Kids Protect into your regimen, or if you're new to Organifi, check out their line of organic superfood blends that offer plant-based nutrition and high-quality ingredients, helping you move from a depleted to nourished state. Head over to www.organifi.com/bestofyou and use code bestofyou for 20% off your entire order. That's www.organifi.com/bestofyou. Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Allison, and I'm so glad you're here to discover what brings out the best of you. This podcast is all about breaking free from painful patterns, mending the past, and discovering our true selves in God. I can't wait to get started as we learn together how to become the best version of who we are with God's help. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the 100th episode of the Best of You podcast. It's hard to believe this is our 100th episode since the podcast aired almost 2 years ago. And gosh, what a journey this has been. I have loved this work of bringing different topics to you each week. It feeds the teacher in me, the part of me that really enjoys breaking down concepts and making them understandable. I used to teach high school and I've taught some graduate level courses in psychology. And so this work of podcasting has just been such a treasure for me. And the fact that you've responded to this podcast in the ways that you have, through sharing it, through messaging me, through listening and reviewing, all of your kind reviews has really validated this work that I do. And I'm just so grateful for that. Frederick Buechner has a beautiful quote that says, "The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." And this podcast has been one of those places for me where I felt like, and here I go, I'm going to start tearing up, which is par for the course for me on this podcast. But this podcast, sitting in my little back room here, speaking words over the microphone to your listening ears, has been such a place for me, a place where I can tease out ideas and learn with you, even as I'm trying to describe and explain and unpack and untangle the knots of complicated topics related to psychology, related to emotional health, and related to our spiritual lives and our faith in God. And so on this release of our 100th podcast episode, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for caring about this work of bringing together good psychology, good science with deep, rich, abiding faith in the God who made us and made himself known through the person of Jesus. I'm so grateful that you're here with me each week. It gives me so much hope in the world as I know you are putting so much goodness, so much healing, and so much light into the world around you. Today, we are continuing the I Shouldn't Feel This Way series. And my guest today is an incredible example of naming what's hard, framing your reality, and then braving a healing path. And those are the three practices that I lay out in I Shouldn't Feel This Way. Name what's hard, frame your reality, and then brave a new path. Those three practices are essential to living a wholehearted life in partnership with God's Spirit. So this book, I Shouldn't Feel This Way, is the most forward-facing of all my books. It's teaching you how to do these daily practices, again, of naming, framing, and braving, so that you can stay on that path toward the life that God has for you. The book comes out May 7th, and when you pre-order it, you will get the first three chapters now. So you'll get the naming step and the framing step, which is actually my favorite step, which I shouldn't say, but it is because I think it's the least talked about and I think it's important. But you're going to get those first three chapters, a guided journal, as well as access to the video masterclass Stuck in Your Head that I did a few weeks ago. You can get I Shouldn't Feel This Way anywhere books are sold. It's going to be in your hands in just a couple of weeks, but you'll get started on those first few chapters. Now head over to ishouldn'tfeelthisway.com to claim those bonus items. So in today's episode, we get into betrayal. Betrayal is the act of betraying a trust that has been placed in someone. Maybe you place trust in a partner, in a friend, in a pastor, in a parent, in a work colleague, and maybe they were unfaithful to you. Maybe they lied to your face or spread lies behind your back. Maybe they broke promises time and time again. Maybe they shared secrets that you had told them in confidence. Betrayal isn't making a one-time mistake. We talk about this a lot on this podcast, and I want to drill down on it one more time here. We all make mistakes, right? We all make mistakes. The difference between making a mistake and a pattern is whether you own it, whether you can go back to the person and say, I made a mistake. I'm so sorry. Here's what I'm doing to change so that this never happens again. Betrayal is a consistent pattern of unfaithfulness, of deception, of manipulation, of broken promises, of breaching confidentiality, of toxic behaviors without taking ownership, without repairing, without any effort to make a change. And it's incredibly painful when you realize that someone you trusted has betrayed you. And not only have they betrayed you, but they're not trying to make it right. They're trying to cover over what they did by adding more lies and more secrecy. My guest today, Steve Carter, has experienced every kind of betrayal, and he's writing about it in his new book called Grieve, Breathe, Receive. And one of those betrayals in particular was extremely public. Many of you may have read the story about what happened at the Willow Creek Church. And this book is just a profound offering about the journey of grief that we have to go on in the wake of a major betrayal. And I love that Steve framed this healing journey as one of grief, because in doing so, he honors the truth of his experience, even as he honors the process of grieving that loss. Steve Carter is the best-selling author of The Thing Beneath the Thing and the host of the Crafting Character podcast. He's a coach, and he currently serves as a teaching pastor at Forest City Church and teaches regularly at churches, conferences, and businesses worldwide. He lives outside Chicago, Illinois, with his wife and two kids. And you can get his brand new book, Grieve, Breathe, Receive, Finding a Faith Strong Enough to Hold Us, anywhere books are sold. I cannot recommend it enough. If you're someone who's experienced betrayal by anyone or just experienced any sort of complicated loss that has left you feeling confused and angry and frustrated, this book has real help and real hope for you. I'm so thrilled to bring you my conversation today with Steve Carter. Steve, this is just such a powerful book. It's a surprising book in the sense that it's, you know, Grieve, Breathe, Receive. It's such a powerful title, but I was really struck by the betrayal after betrayal that launched this process of grief. Throughout the book, you write about the betrayal being on staff at Willow Creek, not just on staff, but correct me if I'm wrong, but being tapped to essentially succeed Bill Hybels as the lead teaching pastor.
Yep. And it was going to be two of us, but I was kind of over content and congregation and in many ways going to be the face of the primary voice preacher. So, yep.
And I remember you telling me when you interviewed me about The Best of You that you had a book queued up about that. I think it was even called The Best of You.
Yes. It was so wild because when we talked and I saw your title and I was like, I always loved that title. And what's crazy is that was the book when I submitted it. My publisher knew about the Bill Hybels story coming out and they told me, and I was like, what? So that, like, that's how I woke up to it. I'm preparing and had written a book, like as a young Timothy taking and stepping in after Paul, and then to see it all come crashing down and the betrayal of it. Yeah.
It's stunning because that book went by the wayside. You write about another book that went by the wayside. It brings tears to my eyes because I know how hard it is to write a book by your own decision because you realized I'm not writing this book out of the right place. So you pulled that book. You've discovered that the story you'd been told about your biological father wasn't true. So a betrayal by your own parents. I mean, there is just a stunning list of betrayals that you experienced within a fairly short period of time. And I think about these, I shouldn't feel this way moments. And as I was reading this with tears in my eyes, thinking this is more than any one human should have to encounter, I'm thinking to myself, and you do such a good job of describing, and then yet you were the one in the wake of all of these betrayals that's left without a job, that's left with people mad at you because you pulled out of Willow Creek on the early end before a lot of other people did, while the church was still kind of in the midst of covering it up. Correct me if I'm wrong. So you're the one without a job. You're the one people are mad at. You're the one reeling. You're the one feeling horrible. I mean, talk about an I shouldn't feel this way moment. And so, Steve, put us back in that moment in time when you have so many emotions, when you hadn't done anything wrong.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit overwhelming to hear you retell all of those sequences. And I don't know if I, before like 3 years ago, would have even used the word betrayal. And I never would have even connected the idea that betrayal trauma and the effects of that, they mess you up. I don't know oftentimes now if my discernment got forever leveled or if it leveled up. You start to just, can I trust myself? And so I think back when it all came out, as it started to unfold, I thought I could save it. And I thought I could get everyone to the table. And I thought we could do this. And I think I never actually believed that an institution would betray victims. I never thought that the people that I knew would choose to preserve something, whether it's a story, whether it's a secret, whether it's hiding. And I think as I started to be awakened to that, whether it's in my family, whether it's in my church family, it, like all of these areas, I was like, is any place safe? And, you know, for me, I say this pretty much every weekend I preach now. Safe plus consistent again and again, over and over on repeat, makes someone worthy of trust. If someone is unsafe and consistent, they're not worthy of trust. Or if they're safe but inconsistent, it's really hard to trust them. And I think what's so tricky is when you start to kind of play out the areas and the spaces where you're getting blamed as the one that betrayed them by leaving. And I'm like, friends, I fought to do the right thing. I didn't do it perfectly. You know, there's some stuff I really wish I would have done differently, like the book that we talked about for a moment ago. Like there's things I wish, but for the most part, what I really longed for was for the church to be what I know the church to be, to walk alongside and hold space with the victims and the marginalized and the hurting and proclaim goodness. But I also realized that I was accessible. The former lead pastor was gone. But I was online and people could get to me and I would engage. And I began to have to really translate their pain because what they said, some of it was just not personal, but it felt very personal. It was about someone else, but they were directing all of that energy towards me. And that's hard. It's hard to navigate through all that stuff.
I'm just thinking of the listener who maybe not at the same public level, right? Of betrayal where everybody knows and it was just such an enormous international scandal. But there was a process of wanting to believe in the institution. There was a journey of wanting to believe, even as information was coming out, until you got to that point of, I've got to leave, I've got to post my resignation. And I think that's important for people to hear, because we do feel so much guilt. How can I not believe in this institution? How can I not believe that what these people are telling me isn't true? I think that's such a normal process. And I guess I'm curious about that. That was maybe a few months of a period of time where you just came to the point where recognizing I can no longer trust this institution.
I got subpoenaed to meet with one of the victims and two other staff people and one elder and Willow's lawyer and this woman's lawyer. And I knew this woman. Like, she lived in my neighborhood back in the day. Like, I knew her. And when she walked in the room, I just knew right then something happened, because that wasn't my friend. And she sat across and shared her story. And I, up until that moment, I was like, hey, is there truth here? My wife, she was a lot quicker to the truth than I was. I was hopeful. I was hopeful we could figure this out. But when I sat across the table with this woman and she shared, and at the end of it, the end of the conversation, I was like, hey, in Bible college, they never taught me how to have conversations with lawyers. Like, I don't know how to do this, but can I call her? Like, we were friends. Can I call her? And the lawyer like talks to her and she says, I would like that. And so the next day I call her, because I'm imagining the vulnerability hangover that she's feeling. And at the end of the conversation, she says, I ask her this question, the dumbest question, but the greatest question. I ask her, what would you like me to do? And she said, get to the truth. And I said, okay. And it was from that moment, I felt like I had permission from a victim to get to the truth. It like jolted me out of the gravitational institutional preservation protection mode to, oh my goodness. And I just started going one by one to each of the women victims and hearing their story. And I totally went rogue. And I don't know if it was the right thing to do, going totally rogue, but I didn't know who I could trust. As I started to hear these stories, I realized this stuff happened. And if we can't name what we did, if we can't name like what we did, how can we fully claim what God did? And there was this massive cognitive dissonance. And so, yeah, that was the tricky piece. I think that moment opened my eyes, and then it became a kind of the next few months. And as I'm doing that, every single day, some other news or information is being revealed to me that I'm going, oh my goodness, I got totally played. I got played. So it was tricky and all of that.
This is the thing about complicated emotions. And I see this with so many people walking through what you're talking about. And I think people who are really loyal, people who are really empathetic, kind of almost don't want to feel those things that you feel, the distrust, the we're not getting at the truth here, that word, what is the truth? And sometimes really going after the truth forces you to do things like going rogue, talking to people, asking things, and it can feel uncomfortable to people. It can feel like you're being disloyal. It can feel like you're going behind people's backs, but you're trying to get at the truth. And so the fact that you're naming that, I think, is so helpful to people, because it can feel really uncomfortable. We might rather avoid the complexity of those feelings.
Well, when I first heard the title of your next book, I was like, that's exactly how I felt. I shouldn't feel like I'm much more in a homeostasis, being loyal, believing the best, really like leaning forward with hope about like giving someone the benefit of the doubt. Like that's kind of how I am. And to realize as I start to untangle, oh my goodness, I'm having these thoughts. And then all of a sudden you shouldn't feel this way. It's like I've jumped the shark. It felt so unfamiliar for me to actually see the whole of a person, the beauty and the brokenness, and hold both. I was literally scared. You know, it just felt so unfamiliar. I think some people are way better at that. I felt like I had to grow up really quickly in that regard.
I think this is the trauma of toxicity and of gaslighting and of these tactics that people use, because it's beautiful. Your God-given design to be loyal, to be empathetic is beautiful, that you want to have hope, that you want to believe in people, right? That's a beautiful aspect of our God-given design. And so when people manipulate, exploit, prey upon that, which you came to find out actually had been happening to you since you were a young child, you didn't even know, it distorts that otherwise good quality. And so we're trying to figure out, how do I be wise and also that kind of innocence that isn't all bad. And so I want to pivot here, right? Because that's where you kind of end up. How do I get back? I don't want to become somebody who's just completely untrusting, who's cynical, who's skeptical, which would be an understandable path after what you went through. Completely understandable, Steve. This is why this book is so, I want everyone to read it who's been through this, because you have experienced the depths of betrayal. And also there's a lot of hope in this book, a lot of goodness. You haven't lost that innocence. And one of the things that I think is so powerful is that you frame what happened as grief. You frame it as a process of grief. And I thought that was such a fascinating way to frame the complicated mix of emotions that you went through. I just got my box of Factor meals for the week, and it is the best feeling. My refrigerator is filled with 8 restaurant quality, healthy meals to feed my family on an otherwise super busy week. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. It's so easy. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or even vegan and veggie. And you can also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/bestofyou50 and use code bestofyou50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code bestofyou50 at factormeals.com/bestofyou50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. That's factormeals.com/bestofyou50. A recent survey found that 7 in 10 parents get an average of just 3 hours of sleep a night in their baby's first year. Moms, you deserve to have quality sleep, and I know one thing that will help. It's Cozy Earth. You can discover the secret to better sleep with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products, and here's an exclusive Mother's Day offer just for our listeners. Use code BESTOFYOU for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. The best part is, Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products. Enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. They're built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights. Treat yourself to ultimate comfort with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear, and prioritize your self-care and sleep health. Head over to CozyEarth.com and use promo code BESTOFYOU for an exclusive 35% off. The luxury she deserves. Cozy Earth. How did you begin to conceptualize the aftermath, the incredible emotional aftermath, as grief? I think there are a couple of ways you could have really framed it. But that framing of grief was really interesting to me.
The day after I resigned, August 5th, 2018, my wife and I and kids, we went to Madison, Wisconsin. And I got up super early and I had turned my phone off. And so I turned my phone on that morning, and it's just littered with comments. Some saying good things, majority of them just really painful things. And I go on a walk in downtown Madison, and I'm just asking the Lord. And I haven't had like this kind of thing happen very often in my life, but I just was like, I need a word. I need something. I don't know what I'm doing next. Like, I knew what the next 25 years of my life is. I don't know what it is now. I don't know. And I sat down at a bench. I didn't hear anything. And I literally just kept crying out to God. And 3 words came: grieve, breathe, receive. And I wrote them down. I went to a donut shop in downtown Madison. I sat down and I wrote, it almost like was like a marching order for me. Grieve what is, grieve what I thought it was going to be, grieve how key people let me down. Breathe in new mercies and exhale anything that's getting in the way, and receive what I need to learn, receive what I need to own, and receive who God wants me to become. That became a mantra. But to be honest, I had no idea what the word grief meant. I had spent my life bypassing the desert, running from the wilderness, not leaning into grief at all. And I think as I started to kind of lean in, I realized like, oh, I gotta feel this. And I think in my own home, like growing up, I shouldn't feel grief. I think even on Sunday mornings, when everything's just always happy and up and to the right, we're just kind of subconsciously taught, you shouldn't feel this. And I think I had to learn, and my definition for grief, and I mean, there's way better ones, but I just, for me, was helpful, was I'm going to honor what comes up when change shows up. There's good change and there's hard change and there's just change. And how do I honor all of those complex emotions that are happening within me and not try to bypass them, but hold space for them? And it became something that just slowly but surely God began to reshape and reform me in a healthier person than I was previously.
And you walk us through in the book, it wasn't those three words, that mantra, it sort of shaped the next few years. Tell us a little bit about that spadura, the different emotions, the different complex emotions that came up for you.
Yeah. So, you know, I think one of the greatest gifts in the desert season, because my family, we lived close to Willow, then we moved to Arizona, and I just started reading the Desert Mothers and Fathers. I just tried to hike and really walk through the deserted lands and see what started to show up. And one of the great gifts, though, of that time was a bunch of mentors who had been in my life from years prior just made themselves available. And I couldn't have gotten through this as quickly without them. But one of them, he knows I love Hebrew and Greek and words. And so he just called me and he just said, how's the spadura? And I'm like, is that a Greek word? I don't know that word. He's like, the spadura, you know? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. There's this acronym that he saw grief, and it was really based off of, you know, Kubler-Ross's kind of five stages of grief. But it was really talking about the shock and the sadness like that comes. And that was the S, the pain, like being able to honor and name. Oftentimes, like we'll start to, you know, in Kubler-Ross, like start to kind of bargain. But that A was anger. And I had a lot of anger. It just wasn't fair. It wasn't right. And I have mastered the art of brightsiding. Was I never wanted to be angry. So I could always turn it to be. And this was a chance where I just had to sit in it. And then oftentimes when I sat in it, because I didn't have any muscles for grief, that anger turned to such profound sadness that there was like a downturn. There was like a depression. I never had been on medication before that. And just, I needed help. My body couldn't get me through this like it normally had. And then there's like this almost surprise. There's a little bit of a, I don't know if it's hope, if it's a little bit of an upside, it's maybe where the waves aren't crashing as much. You just start to begin to see this. And so as I started to like kind of walk through this, I realized it's not like you go from S to P to A to D to U to R to A. It's really like I can be at a U and then go on Twitter and see what someone's posted and it sends me to A. You know, like, and it's just almost like ping pong all over. And it felt more spiral dynamics, circular, than it did actually moving from stage to stage to stage to stage. And so those words and just became almost like a feelings wheel for me, just to teach me how to name where I was at. Because again, I was brought up, you shouldn't feel this way. You shouldn't feel angry. You shouldn't feel like, and to be able to honor that was a real gift for me.
You talk about in the book how crucial it was for you to be defining your reality by naming, to be naming and defining your reality, and that was sort of a lifeline for you. And I can imagine with the level of gaslighting and the level of having to unpack all of the manipulation, you know, it's almost like you had to replay the tape of the story of those years at Willow, even the story of your childhood with the other betrayal, against this new understanding of the truth. And so tell me a little bit about that process of really spending that time in the desert, just redefining your whole reality.
This was the hardest part for me of the grief process. Because I had to be able to look at something and realize I was told that was true, but it's actually not true. I was told that was not true, but that was actually true. And I remember I actually like spent some time with like someone who does complex trauma therapy. And I walked through my story and I'll never forget what she said. She said, Steve, I just need to reflect something back to you. Number one, you were a victim in this. Your goodness, your innocence, it got played on. But number two, this is what I'm more fascinated by. Why are you drawn to narcissists? And I was like, whoa. And I think some of the stuff I had to realize was, why am I drawn to certain places and certain people and certain systems and certain structures? And I think part of it is it was a familiar position growing up. It became familiar. I knew how to navigate through that world, number one. But then I think too, as you start to untangle, you have to look at stuff in the most honest and true way. And if I did get played, which I feel like I did, I have to also honor the truth that someone thought that they could play me and that the perks would overshadow doing the harder right. And that my way of living and operating and people pleasing and fawning and kind of living made me very susceptible to bet on that he will stay complicit and silent. And as I had to start to do that level of work, I realized, oh my goodness, wow, that untangling. But then as you start to untangle that, you go, well, there's stuff that's really beautiful there, but there's also work to be done. And so I think it was not just the untangling of like, that's all bad. It was really the untangling of, man, I let that person say that, and I believe that to be true about me, and that it wasn't. And there's a great verse in Genesis, like, who told you that? God saying that. And I remember Christine Kane saying that. Who told you that? And did God really say, who told you that? And I just realized I took some other people's words as gospel and I had to untangle that. And just coming back to, oh, this is who I am, broken and beautiful. This is who I am. And that was work. That was a lot of work.
And doing that work without shaming yourself, because you were the victim. And it's such a delicate, nuanced tension of, I was wronged here. Let's name what's true. Let's name what's true. And also, what can I, that's that receive. How do I grow so that I don't lose that innocence and also don't let this happen again? To the best of your ability, right? I mean, it's such a delicate balance, right? From not shaming or blaming yourself, but also just looking deep within. That's a brave work. I loved that reframing of the who told you. Not from a shaming place, but from a loving place. Steve, who told you this? Who told you?
Yeah, I think that's really good. I just realized like sometimes the speed of our life, we don't get to slow down to actually just get to stop and reflect. And sometimes when we do, we often feel that shame. And I think part of that process was just realizing one of my mantras was like, no shame, no shade, like just consent to reality and just hold it. And let's just kind of turn it around and almost like it's a diamond to see what reflects and just to see different colors and just get curious. And there were days that it was harder. I felt, man, did I mess up? Wow, man. Like there were days and I had to catch myself and be like, all right, that was enough. That was 7 seconds of shame. This is not helpful to the conversation. Let's just, what can we learn? What can we be curious about? What's the deeper work that can be done? So yeah, that was a helpful piece, but it is so easy for that shame creep just to come in and kind of just take over.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? Would you go for a run? Take a nap, read a book, maybe just spend some time hanging out with a friend. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? Well, therapy can help you find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We can't get more time in our day, but we can be intentional about figuring out what matters most. Therapy can help you figure out how to prioritize the people that mean the most to you, the activities that actually make you come alive, and the purposeful things you want to achieve. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/bestofyou today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/bestofyou. There's a quote that's about that liminality. I talk about these places in between, and I shouldn't feel this way. To do that work of, I do feel this way, I have to have places to metabolize it. You said it so beautifully. You said hope is the liminal vulnerability that invites us into a place where we show up as our whole selves and admit we are limited. We can't undo the past. We can't make people change their minds. I just thought that was sort of, you're holding the tension of your whole self, what you have control over, what you don't, what you can't change, what you can. There was just so much wisdom in that. I also, there was a place where, Steve, it seems as if you sort of, there was a precision to the naming, because I wanted to just end on this note of that I thought is, again, so beautiful about the book, where you are pretty honest, to use your word, you're not bright-siding things about what happened to you, but it's also not a book of hopelessness or cynicism. And I think that's a really hard balance to strike. And you said something really profound. You said, Willow didn't hurt me, five people did. And that reframe seemed really important to you in kind of figuring out how to contextualize what happened. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I found myself just getting asked all the time, how can you still love the church after what happened? Almost as if like people talking about Willow badly. And I struggled with it. And I had to really wrestle. Am I bright-siding here? Am I just like trying to like, you know, preserve and protect? But honestly, I started to realize with it, like, I'm not mad at the sophomore in high school who went to youth group. I'm not frustrated with many of the staff. I loved my job. I loved my life. I loved what I got. I felt a connection with those people, and those people, I believe, felt a connection with me. God was working. I knew it. And as I started to really sit with it, I'm like, it's not Willow. It's these five people. And that reframed it for me to realize like, oh, my work is to ensure that my heart is that I'm actually doing the reparative work to not allow the seeds of unforgiveness to take root in my heart, in my soul, where bitterness, resentment can take over. And that's hard, you know, because every day there are oftentimes reminders of the faces of these five people. And I have to just remember the process of forgiveness. And it's always at work trying to make sure that my heart is ready, that if that day comes where I can break bread, that potentially a miracle can happen. I don't know if that will ever happen, but my work isn't to control whether they show up. My work is to say, will I be ready and not violate my soul, but from an integrated and healthy and beloved place by Jesus and the kingdom of God, like I can engage that. And I think honestly, I didn't want to, because you get energy from being angry. You get an energy from being bitter. You get energy from like, man, just almost like anger fantasizing, like driving and go like, if I saw one of them, this is what I would say. Like there is a high that you get from that. You don't get the same thing with forgiveness. You just get to be a little bit lighter and freer, but it doesn't have that same energy, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. I mean, you get more of the peace, you get more of the hope. It's so interesting as you describe that process of almost compartmentalizing. And I see this with folks who've been through traumas. It's like compartmentalizing those five people that are the real root of the anger, of the bitterness, of the resentment, which in paradoxically almost allows you to be restored with all the folks where there isn't that hurt, right? It's such a paradox that by really drilling down on what was hurtful and the people that really are like, no, that wasn't okay. Maybe I'll work out through a process of forgiveness, but I will also bracket them in my brain as folks who are untrustworthy. It also sort of paradoxically freed you to have more of a peace with the larger story of your time at Willow.
Yes, 100%. And I did an intensive with my therapist, and I realized that, you know, I know that you're familiar and IFS. I feel like I learned about it really like from your first book, and I started to really begin to engage with it. But I realized the the feeling of powerlessness, whenever that feeling would come, the firefighter would just come out and just be like, get that fire out. Just don't ever feel that. Go buy something, go eat something, go experience something, go preach, go work, do something. Don't feel that. Or protect yourself at all costs. But oftentimes I didn't know how to like sit with the powerlessness and then choose a more integrated, embodied path forward. And that I feel like for me is what the gift of almost Sunday brings. The gift of Easter and resurrection is that there is something on the other side of the betrayal. There is something on the other side of the grief. There is something on the other side. And I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. And yet the forming work that came continues to surprise me.
It's just, oh man, the part of me that just grieves with you, I think also being in the middle of being a writer and just knowing the labor that at the very least of all of that, those losses of two books, you know, at the very least of all the things you had to let go of. I'm so grateful for this book because it shows the fruit of the journey for you these last 3 years. And it's so rare, Steve, for us to see examples of people who are naming what's hard, who are being relentlessly honest about the truth, and also simultaneously the process of staying hopeful, for lack of a better word, you know, hopeful that it's not a binary. And actually, the more you name what's hard and the more you sort of quarantine it out, the more you actually can find hope. What would you say, Steve, to that younger 38-year-old you now, if you could sit with him for a moment, who's about to go into this?
It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You know, the whole first half of life energy and second half of life energy, there's something that's so real about it. But there's a band called Brand New, and they have this song. They're not a Christian band, but they have this song called Jesus Christ. And they say this line, Jesus, what did you do those 3 days that you were dead? Because this problem is going to last more than the weekend. And I think that kind of sense of, for some of us, Friday is going to be a lot of days, just the grief. And the Saturday of breathe, just that might be a lot of days and a lot of seasons. But Sunday does come, and it doesn't come the way that we thought it would come, but or that we hoped it would come. It usually surprisingly comes in different ways. And I think I just realized, like, it's not going to be what I thought it was going to be, but it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
It's a powerful, powerful example of going into that place in between that Saturday, that Easter Saturday, for a prolonged period of time and letting it do its work so that now in good time, you know, you're able to tell your story and you're able to tell it in a way that will bless people, will honor folks who've been through betrayals, who've been through hard times, who need to grieve, and who also don't want to get swallowed up by it, but want to come out the other side. So I guess the last question I would ask is, what would you say to those listening who are in the midst of processing through betrayal? Maybe it's the same thing.
Yeah, I think the grief journey, you know, I think that Friday, Saturday, Sunday just became a, you know, grief is Friday, breathe is Saturday, receive is Sunday. This became a healthy mantra and just, but I had to honor, and you have to honor what comes up when Friday shows up. And Friday is when you are in grief. You are like, how could this happen? And then Saturday is you actually trying to trick your brain to go like, I can get through this. I can get through this. I'll figure this out. You know, I know what to do. Like, And then Sunday is just the reality that, you can't get through it, but you will walk with grief and it will be a part of your story, but it won't have the same amount of energy that it once had. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. It's you're going to hold it. It's going to be a companion that you will carry with you, and it will shape you and form you, and it will also surprise you. And so for me, that's kind of the reality that for anyone who's walking through it, it's okay to name if it's Friday or if it's Saturday for you, but just hold on to the reality that in the way that doesn't make sense, God will surprise you because Sunday's coming.
Well, thank you for pastoring us through this with this book. I think it's going to help so many people. How can people find you? How can they find the book?
Yeah, thank you. SteveCarter.org, and you can go there at Steve Ryan Carter on Instagram and Twitter or X or whatever we call it. And then the book is, you know, everywhere books are sold. So feel free to reach out. I always love to connect with people. And Allison, I just have to say, like, your voice, it's so refreshing when I read you and I listen to the podcast and I hear you, then I get the chance to like read and it's like, I feel like I hear you, and it's your ability to take such thoughtful concepts and make them accessible. I mean, there were moments where your first book, it was like with me in the desert. And so I just thank you. I think for so many of us who listen to you on the regular, thank you just for consistently just being that truth teller, that guide, and a reminder that it's going to be all right.
I appreciate that. I'm so grateful that it's sort of cliche, but you know, it's Mr. Rogers who said, you know, in the midst of so much dismay, look for the helpers, right? Look for the people. And you're one of those people, you know, just reading this book. I was honestly, Steve, going into this book, kind of grieving, not in my own personal life, but just some of the tragic fallout of our culture that we're seeing in the church culture. And I just read this book and I thought, what a gift in the middle of it. What a gift. I am so sorry that you had to go through it. And I'm so grateful for the fruit that you allow God to bring in your life through it. So just so grateful for you. Just so grateful for your work, for these words, for your life, for the goodness that you've allowed to continue to come through your story.
Thank you. It means the world coming from you.
Yeah. So Steve, are there any pre-order items for folks if they want to go ahead and get the book now?
Yeah, our books come out on the same day, which I'm so excited about. It's such an honor. If people pre-order and they go to SteveCarter.org, they will get, I wrote something called the Evening Psalms, which is just a like devotional. So of like 150 Psalms for people, so they can get that for free. And then we have like small group curriculum that we've created and for just conversations for people to have. So they're on my website. There's a bunch of little freebies if people choose to pre-order and submit the receipt number.
Awesome. I'm so glad, because I guarantee you whatever you've put out will be helpful to folks. So go get that and read Grieve, Breathe, Receive. Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of The Best of You. It would mean so much if you take a moment to subscribe. You can go to Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts and click the plus or follow button. That will ensure you don't miss an episode, and it helps get the word out to others. While you're there, I'd love it if you leave your 5-star review. I look forward to seeing you back here next Thursday. And remember, as you become the best of who you are, you honor God, you heal others, and you stay true to your God-given self.